Welcome to Status Check with Spivey, where we talk about life, law school admissions, a little bit of everything. Today's mostly going to be law school admissions. The title of this podcast is How Important is Work Experience in the Admissions Process? I say mostly because I have a feeling I'm going to talk a little bit about how to get a job. I used to also be a Dean of Career Services, so hopefully I'll throw in some of that. But let's talk about the admissions process. Obviously, there's been change, which is why this has been the topic of the year almost, it seems like. I mean, there was the SCOTUS change, but the change that elicits this conversation is mostly around the fact that U.S. News just eviscerated what they call selectivity, which is the three measurements of inputs, LSAT, GPA, and selectivity itself. And they skyrocketed outcomes, mostly the bar passage rate importance and the employment importance, got rid of one of the employment categories, but dramatically increased the weight of employment. First, you have to make an assumption that schools care about U.S. News and World Report rankings. Let me assure you, the vast majority of schools care deeply about U.S. News and World Report rankings. It's how they fundraise, student morale increases, faculty morale increases, you can hire more faculty, et cetera, when you're higher ranked. And there's a lot of pressure from your board, from your president, who you report to, or the provost, to at least, at minimum, hold par on rankings, but most often to improve in rankings. So I've worked with 35 different law schools in various capacities. There's only one law school I ever worked with that couldn't care less about rankings, and it's because they were on ABA probation. All they cared about was improving their bar passage, which they did dramatically because their dean was a wonderful person who had really good strategic thoughts on how to improve the law school, and they did. And they got off ABA probation. Every other law school, to some extent, has expressed, hey, it would be great if we went up in the rankings. So if you make that assumption, and you look at the increase in the employment category of U.S. News rankings, your first thought is going to be, well, okay, what correlates the most with jobs? It's an interesting question because the answer from an objective data point is going to be LSAT. Maybe, because it's a squiggly line, and I'll tell you what I mean by that. I used to have all these numbers memorized, particularly when I was in law schools. LSAT's a pretty good predictor of first-year grade performance. It's a better predictor than undergrad GPA, which might be why U.S. News values it 1% more than undergrad GPA in the weight category. Nothing's a great predictor. I think my best guess is if you average this out over many years, LSAT plus GPA predict about 50% of your first year GPA. Why is it only 50%? Because you cannot test for motivation. You cannot test for people who mature. I'm a good example of that. My undergraduate performance at Vanderbilt many years ago when I was a student was not great. But when I went off to business school, I think I graduated, if not at the top, near the top of my class, because I went out and worked for a year and I said, wow, now it's time to get your stuff together. And I came into the business school a totally different person than I was in undergrad. I didn't care about hanging out with my friends and playing video games. I was in the library till right now it's 4 a.m. And that's because I get up at 3. When I was in my 20s, I probably stayed up till 4 and then slept. But either way, I was working hard and grinding. So here's where the squiggly line comes in. And yes, your first year performance predicts OCI jobs very well, but nationwide, only about 10% of students get jobs through OCI, which means on-campus interviews, which means firms are coming and recruiting you in various shape, forms, or manner, whether it's in-person or over video interviews. Now, obviously that varies from school to school. An elite school, maybe like 40% of their students get jobs through OCI, and then maybe some schools is 5%, but nationwide, the average is 10%. So look, again, let me just stress, the most important part of the admissions process, and this will ring true this cycle, although it's going to be a little bit less important, particularly as the cycle drags on, is your stats. You always want to have strong stats. They can't hurt you, and very likely they're going to help you, particularly the early admits. Admissions officers are entirely used to admitting based on these objective data and then reading thoroughly your application. But the objective data is what they look at first. It's what they sort by. So you want a strong LSAT score. You want a high GPA, ideally. There's probably, if you're listening to this podcast and you're applying this cycle, there's probably not much you can do about your GPA, but put forth your best LSAT score. If you're going to throw money into the process, throw it into your LSAT prep first, of course. But if 20% of the class is hired through OCI, the top 20%, it's irrelevant if that school's median LSAT is a 156 or a 176. What do I mean by that? LSAT does predict first-year performance, but if the median LSAT is centered around any bandwidth, the top 20% are going to be the top 20%, which means 80% correlated with your LSAT score are going to be getting jobs not based on their first-year GPA OCI. See what I mean by a squiggly line? LSAT matters for employability, but it matters because, one, the schools with the higher LSAT scores, medians, tend to be the higher-ranked schools, so that more of their students get jobs through on-campus interviews. And two, because it correlates with first-year performance, and the top 10, 15, 20% of students tend to get jobs through OCI. But now, because of this U.S. News change, as a proxy in admissions for employability, schools are going to be looking at other things. And we see this already in the application changes. We're going to see it some this year. And I think the biggest, other than LSAT score and GPA, now your application, and particularly work experience expressed in your application, is going to be used to determine, is this student employable? Because again, employment outcomes matter more than ever before. Am I saying, hey, Spivey, I'm KJD, do I have to go get a job? No, do what you want to do. Certainly don't do what I tell you to do. But what I am saying is, we've probably had a job. I've waited tables all throughout college, and I worked in housekeeping at a hotel. Unbeknownst to me at the time, if I had applied to law school, those would have been two great work experience jobs. One, housekeeping at a hotel is a little bit of an outlier for a college student. Two, waiting tables. When I was in admissions, I loved the people who had service jobs because you're used to dealing with customer complaints, which means over time, it gives you the ability to see things from the other side, and you're a little bit more maybe less apt to be combative in law school because you can see something from another person's perspective, which is also important because what do lawyers do if not have to see things through their client's perspective, not just their own? Long story short, probably the more work experience, the better. In Mana Hicks-Hocko, who's our COO, but who just came off a dean of admissions stint, a job outside of Spivey Consulting for a year as a dean of admissions. She just mentioned this on the last podcast. There are so many personal statements and essays out there that read like resumes. Don't do that. But if you can organically fit in your work experience, they're going to see it on your resume anyways. If you could talk about it, then I'm going to ping on the intangibles. If you can talk about it in the interview process, you're probably going to stand out a little bit more this year than ever before or ever in my 25 years doing this, because of those U.S. News and World Report changes. So there's the flat data points of having work experience, and then there's the organic data points of building your application. We're going to put some new sample personal statements up on our website before too long that are more work experience focused because of this whole change. Those organic data points of flowing through your application with work experience, that's going to give you a boost in the admissions process. But there's intangibles too. If you have work experience, and again, I'm assuming most people do, even if they're KJD, at the macro level, you're probably going to have a little more to talk about in an interview because it's probably going to come up. You know about your work experience. I don't care if you worked at Disneyland at a roller coaster over the summer. You can talk about that. The person on the other end of the phone, I love interviews. They're so easy because they're asking you about you. Only you know about you. Only you know about your work experience. So you can talk very naturally and organically. If someone asked me about my career, how easy would it be for me to explain what I've done? Because I know about my career, but they don't. So your interviews, by definition, are probably going to be a little smoother. You've probably learned from that work experience, particularly if you have multiple years of high stress work experience or high professionalism work experience. You've picked up from your mentors, you've picked up from people around you, and that's going to stand out. And let me tell you, again, as much as I still think stats matter, having a professional attitude when you interact with admissions is going to matter a ton. Being professional, being humble, being upbeat, all these things are going to matter a ton because at the end of the day, later in the cycle, when schools are looking at their budgets and they're looking at the U.S. news changes and they're saying, okay, well, we're plus 30 people above our median LSAT. And here's what I mean by that. this is something probably most people don't think about if you haven't done admissions. But when you're in admissions, you run daily reports to see how many, because it's median, not mean, how many of your seat deposits, the people who have paid and said they are coming, are above your median. So let's just say, and I'm not saying I know this, but let's say most schools this cycle say, okay, we're just going to hold par on LSAT. Then they run a report in the summer and they're plus 47 people above their target LSAT, which is holding par. So in other words, if your LSAT's a 166, you would have to lose 47 people to go from a 166 to a 165. Guess who they're going to turn to? And this is a punchline of the whole podcast. 14 minutes in, and I'm finally giving the punchline. The people in the admissions process who have impressed them as professional, ebullient, upbeat, employable people. Guess who the most likely of that batch are? Probably people with some work experience. Not always, but probably. Employability matters more now. Admissions officers are being asked by their bosses, the dean of the law school, look for signals of employability. Guess what law schools call me about for consulting? How do we intertwine? How do we interlock? How do we get in sync our admissions offices and our career services offices, which historically have operated entirely as silos? This is a side note, but to me, it's interesting. You're going to see more positions in law schools that are something like an associate dean of admissions and career services, because law schools are going to be looking, and this pings exactly on this notion of work experience mattering. Law schools are going to be looking more at, okay, how do we make an upstream admissions decisions that correlate and relate to downstream employability? This is why I think this cycle is going to be a little bit more normalized. And I apologize if people are misreading things I've said. Change happens slowly in legal education. And the data, although it's right in front of law schools as far as the weight of the metrics, is actually when you start putting in numbers, like Justin Kane, our U.S. news expert and data genius, does, the data is actually much more pronounced than it looks like. So here's what I would expect. I would expect this year, schools are mostly going to make their early decisions based on numbers, and there's going to be a little bit less of that right angle of death. What I mean by that is, again, if you have 47 people above your target LSAT and it's June, you can start admitting people outside that sort of inflection point of the right angle, unlike years past where you saw no admits of people below that inflection point. You're going to see more admits outside that right angle. So for lack of a better word, I think now is being a curved angle of death, but it won't be that pronounced this year. But next year, when schools see what happens in the rankings, in the schools that went up plus one, plus two LSAT, but didn't improve their employability, they're going to go down in the rankings. We have already played out these scenarios. We've already plugged in the data and hypothetical scenarios. So then next year, you're really going to see a shift, I think, towards deans of law schools who have enormous pressure on them to improve the school rankings. Say to admissions and career services, our admissions numbers do not impact our rankings that much. It's almost a rounding error for a raw score. Find us people who can get jobs. For the record, these are just my instincts. And next cycle is out there in the future. The further you get out in the future, the harder this stuff gets to predict. I've been wrong before. And even if I'm right in the static moment, U.S. News and World Report could change the weights again, or they could even change the metrics. We're going to keep updating podcasts to be determined. This is not an absolute. This is just where things are trending right now. So this year, I still think it's going to be a slow cycle because of all the change in essays, the change in applications. Someone asked, why did the LSAC August virtual test failure debacle slow the cycle down? I think schools are going to want to see if LSAC releases data on the virtual test taker LSAT scores versus the in-person. A, if there's a dramatic difference, LSAC historically doesn't share that kind of data. Any sort of data that makes the LSAT look flawed, LSAC goes to great lengths to obscure, not just from you all, but from law schools and from pre-law advisors. At least there's a precedent for that. I can't say that they're still going to do that. But if there's a huge score differential between virtual takers and in-person takers, that's statistically significant, law schools are going to want to know about that, because it doesn't necessarily mean that the virtual takers, let's say, have a negative four LSAT average, and that would be extreme, versus the in-person. It doesn't mean that they're 4 points less capable of scoring on the LSAT. It could be that they sat there in a chair for 6 hours, traumatized because their proctor never showed up and LSAC never released a statement. so they couldn't move. So then when they retook it in a week, they had this psychological trauma and scored much more poorly because they were in their own heads, which would be completely understandable. So that's going to slow down a cycle along with all the application changes. So slow cycle, but early cycle admits are still probably going to be stats heavy. But then work experience is going to matter more than ever before, at least ever before in my 25-year history, because of these outcomes. I'll say it again. If you're applying, this is a good year to apply to Stretch schools. And if you have work experience, how important does work experience matter? That could be the thing that puts you over the top later this summer as far as getting off the wait list, much more so than years past. Even when you look at this past cycle, and we knew the USD's metric changes, and we knew there was going to be a lot of wait list movement, which there was, a lot of schools were still hinging the wait list movement on LSAT scores. So you saw a lot of lower GPA, higher LSAT scores admitted off the wait list. Schools are going to figure out that is not impacting their rankings anymore, those LSAT scores. So when they figure it out, whether it's this cycle or next cycle or three cycles from now, the people admitted later with lower GPAs and maybe lower LSAT scores are going to be the people with work experience. Work experience is important. I'll end on this note. What prompted me to do this was a thread that said something like, the reason why people devalue work experience is because most of the people on Reddit are age 18 to 22 or whatever. Maybe that's true, maybe that's not. I would say this. If you're 18 years old, you probably have work experience, right? You deliver papers or cut, mowed people's yards or whatever. If you're 22 years old, you probably have work experience. If you're 30 years old and you have 8 years work experience, you're probably going to get a bump in admissions. But almost everyone listening to this podcast, I just think you want to put some sort of shine in your application, some sort of putting your best foot forward towards your professionalism, which also means, just as a side note, if you're just constantly saying things on Reddit, if a law school knew your name would reflect poorly on you, don't do it. Now's the time to be the most professional person you can be, because professionalism really does translate to employability, and employability is the new name of the game. Hope this was helpful. This was unscripted, again, 4 a.m. On a side note, since we're talking about work, most people listening to this are going to have much more important jobs than I do, right? Every time I watch a Netflix documentary, you're going to be called upon to save someone's life or life in imprisonment or get them out of prison or work for the government in high-level leadership roles. I bring this up because you're going to have a lot of 4 a.m. mornings too in your future. I cannot stand when older people tell younger people, don't be a lawyer, it's not what it used to be. How do they know? You need to be a lawyer first until you know whether you want to be a lawyer or not. That said, I do think there is some importance to the awareness of you're going to have some long hours in your career. And again, you can express that you've done that already in your application. The more you can express that you're a grinder and that's going to help you actually get stronger grades in law school and be more employable, probably the better. So this is Mike Spivey signing off at 4 a.m. I hope this was helpful.